Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And we've got a very important show today, leading off with an interview with Mark Arabo, a local Chaldean leader. We spoke with him last week, and he's back again today after some high-level meetings in Washington, D.C. to bring us the latest on the unfolding crisis in Iraq. We'll have an update on some major environmental measures, including what critics have called the Monopoly Protection Bill, which impacts community choice energy alternatives for consumers, as well as hearings announced by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency over its controversial proposal to issue 30-year take permits that would let wind developers and other corporations off the hook if their projects result in eagle deaths. You'll also hear about a nationwide FBI sweep that rescued children and adults from human traffickers, including some right here in San Diego. Plus, we'll tell you about a court ruling striking down the government's no-fly list procedures. And you'll hear about some Major League Baseball players from San Diego who are speaking out against smokeless tobacco following Tony Gwynn's tragic death. We also have some breaking news on the death of a prominent national leader in the Chaldean community. Now, if you're heading off on vacation, the sheriff has some safety tips for you. And if you're staying in town, our Destination East County segment will tell you all about plenty of fun activities to do this weekend and over the 4th of July holiday. So stay tuned for today's East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Mark Arabo. Many of you know Mark from the Neighborhood Market Association here in East County, but he is also a leader in the Chaldean community who has been working at a national and indeed an international level to address the growing humanitarian crisis in Iraq. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, we spoke with you last week on the show. At that time, the city of Mosul had just fallen to the terrorist group ISIL, or now they're calling it ISIS, I guess, different translation. But at any rate, what has happened since then? I understand you've just returned from Washington, D.C. with some high-level meetings. Tell us what you found out about the status of the violence in Iraq.
I was in Washington, D.C. for 2 days, last Thursday and Friday. I met with numerous members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. I met with the U.S. Senators' offices. I met with Majority Leader Harry Reid's office, with the Chief Counsel, with Dick Durbin's office. I also had four different meetings with the State Department, and during our meetings, I was briefed, and they confirmed our worst nightmare, which is this is, in fact, a slow genocide. Mm. It's a global humanitarian crisis, and it's actually a lot worse than people are reporting. What we've seen from our trip to Washington is it's around 1.5 million people displaced from their homes.
1.5 million. To put that in perspective, listeners, during the 2007 wildfires in San Diego County, which was said to be the largest evacuation in world history at that time, at least from a natural disaster, that was 500,000 people. It was larger than Hurricane Katrina, and this is three times that number.
Yeah, it is truly a global crisis happening in Iraq.
Now, these people, how many of those are the Iraqi Christians or Chaldeans, and how many are other minority sects or groups that are being targeted?
So from the last number we've seen from our last recent trip, around 450,000 are Chaldeans, and the rest are different minorities and Christians and non-Christians. And we're lending our voice and using what we could do, not just for the Chaldean community, but for Christians and non-Christians alike, any minority, any group, that's been being targeted, being killed. I mean, some photos that they showed us, they are mutilating bodies, they're beheading people. Ugh. There are the most worst acts you could do to a human, they're doing it.
Chilling.
With no respect for life whatsoever. And 50% of the folks are children. 50% are children.
Of the displaced or of the victims that have already been killed?
Of both.
Wow.
And so a lot of times what they're doing is they're murdering the mom and the kids, and they're letting the dad survive so he can either convert or he can spread the news. So it's extremely heart-wrenching in every sense of the word. And ISIS is doing this huge convert or die campaign, and there's no question about it that Christianity is under attack in the Middle East, and the only place right now that you could be a Christian openly, safely, is Israel. Jordan's pretty safe, but Israel is still a beacon of hope for all minorities, and it's really a hope for democracy in the entire region.
So, of the 1.5 million people that are currently displaced from their homes by the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist group ISIS, where are the refugees right now, Mark? Are they in refugee camps in Iraq or somewhere else or in hiding? Where are they?
Well, they're all of the above. They're hiding. They're in neighboring cities. Some of them are going to Kurdistan. Some of them are trying to get into Turkey. Recently, ISIS has took over the border crossing from Jordan. And as you know, Syria is just as bad as Iraq. So
yeah,
most
they're in
of
the midst
them,
of their own civil war there.
Yeah, this is a civil war throughout the entire region. And it's really a global humanitarian crisis. The last time the world has seen something this bad was Bosnia. Mm. But in Bosnia, we had 10,000 people. Here, you have 40 times the amount, just Chaldeans. And then you have, if you count displaced, that's 1.5 million.
Yeah, people. I mean, we're approaching not quite the Holocaust during World War II, but we're certainly, it's beginning to have elements of that, isn't it?
Right. Well, the world has never, in modern day, in the last 20, 30 years, we've never seen something at this magnitude. And for folks to realize that right now, as we speak, as I'm doing this interview, children and families are being mutilated, raped, killed, just for being who they are.
What they believe.
And who they believe. And so folks are saying, you convert or die. And another important point, for the last 1,600 years in the city of Mosul, there's always been a mass on Sunday. For the last 1,600 years,
with
the exception of this last Sunday.
This is really, some say, the cradle of civilization, but, you know, the cradle of Christianity, Mesopotamia,
right.
And so the Christians are being uprooted from their historic home. And as we've noted, too, it isn't just Christians. Some of the people being massacred are Islamic themselves. Is that correct? But just a different sect from...
Yeah. And I hope that one religion or one community doesn't get a black eye. You know, this is... I have a lot of friends that are Muslim. I have a lot of friends that are Jewish, a lot of friends that are Christian, atheist, agnostic. And the overwhelming majority of all these religions are incredibly peaceful people.
Mm-hmm.
The folks doing these crimes in Iraq are just jihadists, extremists.
Yeah.
And if you look at the number that we've been briefed on in D.C., there's only around 10,000 militants, 9,000 to 10,000 militants that are ISIS in Iraq. And there's 250,000 Iraqi soldiers. But the reason why ISIS has been able to get so much momentum was the Sunnis have felt like, some of the Sunnis have felt like they've been shut out of the Maliki administration. And they felt that like they've been treated like not part of the government. So they're doing everything they can to get representation within the Maliki government.
Mark, I understand while you were in Washington in the last few days that you had a meeting with the State Department. What is the latest news that you heard directly from the State Department about the Maliki government?
So we had multiple meetings with State Department officials, and I can tell you that Secretary of State John Kerry was on his way to the Middle East. We know that yesterday he met with Prime Minister Maliki, where he told the Prime Minister, you have until July 1st to make it an inclusive government in Iraq if you want the United States support in any possible airstrikes or any help. And so the Prime Minister assured Secretary John Kerry that he will do inclusive government for everyone. And
so this is important. This is breaking world news that Maliki has agreed to create an inclusive government.
Yeah, no, it definitely is breaking news.
How much difference will that make?
I think it will make a huge difference, because what you'll see is if the Sunnis and the Kurds, Shiites, and Christians alike are united in a democratic Iraq, then automatically the Sunnis will break away from ISIS. And then you'll have the Iraqi country, the Iraqi government, united, fighting this extremist group.
And will they be able to prevail? ISIS is very well funded now with money that they looted and with the weapons that they actually stole from the Iraqi army, some of which were provided originally by the United States.
Right. I do think that our odds of succeeding are increased dramatically if the Sunnis and the Shiites unite.
Is there hope that these displaced people can ever go home again?
You know, that is the most complicated question that we face every day, because there's so many different variables. I know that all the Chaldeans that have come to America are absolutely in love with America and would never go back, even if it's better. They're similar to the Italians that came from, Italian Americans that came from Italy. Mm-hmm. If Iraq is safe, I know the Chaldeans will probably visit Iraq to show their children, you know, this is the ancestry. Mm-hmm. But when you come to the most incredible country in the world like America, nobody wants to leave.
What about the ones who've just immediately been displaced, who haven't come to America or anywhere else? Right now they're in a refugee camp, or they're in hiding, or staying with friends or relatives somewhere outside of these cities that have been taken over. Do you think that there might be room eventually for some of those folks to return if the Maliki government that's inclusive is successful in bringing some peace to the region?
I do think that if the government's very inclusive and very safe for Christians, that the Christians all throughout the refugee camps will come back to Iraq.
Interesting. And of course, as we've noted, there's a million other people besides the Christians that are displaced as well.
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe that it is possible to roll back the violence that we've seen there and the control that ISIS has physically taken of so many cities in Iraq if the Maliki government steps aside or creates a more inclusive model where some of these groups that were, or this major group, the Ba'ath Party, for example, that was left out of the government formed after the fall of Saddam Hussein and the U.S. invasion, if it becomes an inclusive government so that they have their voice included, will that do it, do you think? Or is it going to take some kind of military intervention to bring peace to Iraq and respect for the rights of minorities? Or are those rights just gone forever?
It's a multi-layered question. The first part of the question is, short-term, definitely we do feel as a community at large that if Prime Minister Maliki has an inclusive government for everyone, Shiites, Sunnis alike, with Kurds and Christians, what will happen is the Sunnis will break away from ISIS. And then the government could really focus their efforts on getting ISIS not in control of Baghdad or other cities. We do feel that the United States and like-minded nations should use soft-handed diplomacy. Everything we could do, with the exception of sending troops. We do not feel like we should send any more troops. And I can tell you, as an American first that happens to be Chaldean, we are forever indebted to our soldiers, to our troops. You know, we've lost almost 5,000 of our sons and daughters, our soldiers, in this war. We've been in this war for 11 years, and it's unraveling before our eyes. So we do not think that we should send any more troops. We think that Iraqis should govern themselves. They should protect themselves long term. Short term, we're working with the House of Representatives and the Senate to do a House resolution to increase the regional immigration ceiling for the Middle East. And step two is to expedite the visa process so folks don't have to wait years and years to come, not just to the States, but to the entire world. So I spoke to officials from the United Nations yesterday, and we want to elevate this conversation to the UN to let the folks know that this is a global humanitarian crisis, that it's not America's problem, it's the world's problem, and we need to be all in it together, because the world's peace is highly dependent on neighboring countries that have these extremist violence. We need to find a way, the world community, to come together in a peaceful manner. It may be hopefully led by Pope Francis or other religious leaders.
What kind of response did you get at the United Nations and also with some of the high-level talks that you've had in Washington in the last week?
Well, the talks in Washington was a tremendous success. I had 20 different meetings in 2 days with State Department, with members of Congress, and with the U.S. Senate. We might be going back there soon in 3 weeks or so to push this resolution and hopefully make it a law. I could thank Congressman Juan Vargas, Congressman Scott Peters, and Congressman Duncan Hunter.
So there's bipartisan support for getting help for these displaced people.
Absolutely. And I could tell you that Republicans and Democrats alike have all said the same thing, that our hearts are with the folks that are being massacred, and we're going to do something to fix it and solve it as soon as possible. So we've had tremendous success.
Where will they go? When I've talked to other people about this story, everyone's heart goes out to these people that are so persecuted. And on the other hand, sometimes they say, but won't it strain our resources if this huge influx of people come here in communities that already have many, many refugees? Is Congress willing to not just bring people into the country, but provide some resources to help them, you know, learning English, getting job training, these other sorts of things, maybe the immediate support they may need until they're able to stand on their own feet here?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I could tell you that the one thing that we're asking for is not everyone come to America. We're saying United States and like-minded nations come together, and the UN comes together and says, where can we place these folks? Maybe go to Australia, to Europe, to Canada, to Mexico, to the United States. Currently, the United States lets in 70,000 people, refugees a year, to the country.
Total, from everywhere.
Total. Out of that 70,000, 10,000 are from the Middle Eastern region. So what we're asking Congress to do is keep the 70,000. So don't increase the amount of people we bring to the country, because the country is strained in resources. What we're asking for is to increase the number, the ceiling for the Middle East. So instead of 10,000, make it 50,000.
Okay.
Just short term. And that way what would happen is the people that are being massacred and mutilated
would have the first priority.
Would have first priority. Yeah. So just reprioritize the areas. Let's expedite the visa process. But this is not just the United States' problem. This is the world's problem.
Right.
I hope the world comes together, Canada, Mexico, Europe, Australia, as a humans first, humanitarians, having a human heart. You know, when a little girl gets killed and beheaded, and her brother is hung in front of their mom. This is the ugliest and most evil part of humanity anyone has ever seen.
Absolutely.
And it's happening right now. And it's, we've had sleepless nights and long days, and we'll do everything we can in America.
How is this impacting the local people here in the Middle Eastern community, the Chaldeans, but also some of the local Muslims who may be affected as well? What are you hearing? Are there people whose families have directly been impacted who are displaced or worse, who've had deaths at the hands of these terrorists?
You know, I think that the Christians and the Muslims, Americans at large, are all stand united in peace, and everyone's denouncing these heinous crimes. 2 days ago, a mom called me, and a mom that's in San Diego, that she heard that her son was beheaded.
Oh my God.
And she was telling me, and it was so chilling. She was crying, and it was such a probably one of the worst phone calls I received in my life. And
must be so difficult.
And she can't confirm it. It's because the communication's still down. So she heard that, and we're still trying to instill some hope and some light at the end of the tunnel. But, you know, short term, this is a disaster and huge implications, not just for the Middle East, but for the entire world. We have to do what we can as human beings. We can't let anyone be killed just for being who they are and for believing in what they want to believe. And you know, we hope that Iraq one day will be a democratic state that is inclusive of Shiites and Sunnis and Kurds and Christians alike, and we hope that it's an Iraq for everyone. And, you know, when you have a country that is an inclusive, that celebrates our differences, doesn't attack them, that really puts equal representation, not rhetoric, but reality, incredible things happen. And that's you see that the best testament to that is the best country in the history of the world, which is the United States of America. I mean, this is people should see our government, and they do, and they envy us, because in America, it doesn't matter who you are and where you come from and what your skin color is, or you're not judged by who you are. You're judged by your actions. And that we have that hope for, not just for Iraq, but for the entire Middle East and for the entire world.
With the more inclusive government that includes all of the factions under Maliki, or a new leader perhaps, if that were to occur, what about the rights of women in Iraq? If we bring in factions that do not believe in equality for women, perhaps support, for example, Sharia law, should the world community try to protect the rights of women in Iraq? And if so, how?
Sure. I think the world community should absolutely protect the rights of women, not just in Iraq, but throughout the world. Any country that doesn't have women equally at the forefront with men is automatically flawed from the onset. I think the UN needs to make this a world priority to make sure that women all throughout the world have equal rights as men. As perfect as our nation is, we have some things back home that we need to fix, like equal pay for women and men.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at other parts of the world, you're absolutely right, Mariam.
Where they're stoning, I think it was just in the news today, stoning to death of a pregnant woman because she wouldn't convert to Islam.
And these are the stories that are happening every day throughout the region. And I can tell you that women should 100% be equal to men on every level, in every sense. And the world community, I think NATO and UN need to send in peacekeepers right away. I think we should document everything that's happening now. This is a slow genocide before our eyes. It's a global humanitarian crisis.
You say slow genocide, but it sounds like it's not so slow if they're going in and literally beheading and massacring people.
The reason why I say slow is because they're systematically killing folks, but some parts of the militias are worse than others. If you look at the stuff that we've seen in the last few days, it's just very tragic.
Yeah, the whole thing is absolutely heartbreaking. What are you hearing from your colleagues in Detroit, which is another large center for the Chaldean community in the United States, Mark?
We had someone from Michigan join us in our trip to Washington, D.C. And his name was Johnny Oram, and what he was talking about the Michigans in the Chaldeans, families in Michigan that are impacted. The Chaldean community at large is very united. Michigan and San Diego and Arizona, Nevada. And that we need to find a way to do a safe passage, a mass exodus for these Christians out of Iraq, whether it be to Turkey, Jordan, Kurdistan. We're trying to map out a strategy of how to do that, but we don't want to talk about it because we don't want other folks to realize our strategy.
The details. If listeners out there are concerned about this and they want to help in some way, what can they do?
Well, the main thing right now is offer your prayers and offer your voices to your members of Congress. We feel like the more folks talk about this, not just to their members of Congress, but to their priests, to their pastors, to their spiritual advisors. And we believe always as a community, the power of prayer coming together as a world community, as human beings first. There'll be stuff later down the road with our Chaldean church. I would say if anyone wants to help, they should donate either to the Red Cross or to if the church itself does a fund, they haven't done one yet. Be wary of any other types of funds that folks know who you're giving to.
There is a petition that you had posted at one point, Mark. Is that still circulating?
Still circulating, yeah. We have the petition. We've had 55 members of Congress sign on a letter saying that to President Obama, save the Iraqi Christians. But this issue is much more broader than just Chaldeans or Christians in area. It's any community in the history of mankind that's ever been killed, ever been murdered, or mutilated, just for the fact that they are who they are and they believe what they believe. And this should not be happening in 2014, and it is. We should not be talking about this, and we are. And it shows that as far as we've come as a world community, how much more we need to go.
Yeah. And I should add here, by the way, that we have invited some of the Muslim leaders, the Islamic leaders in San Diego to come on the show. We hope that they will respond, and we hope that they will come and speak out and lend their voices and their views to this unfolding crisis in the Middle East. Mark, do you have any final thoughts to share with our listeners on this important topic?
I can't reiterate enough how forever indebted the world community is to our soldiers. We've lost almost 5,000 of our sons and daughters in this war. 11 years we've spent bloodshed. And we do not feel as a community that we should send any more troops whatsoever. We should do soft-handed diplomacy. We should work with world leaders to come together and to help out these folks. And I also hope that people do not blame a certain religion or a certain ethnicity. Like I said before, I have a lot of friends that are Muslim, that are Jewish, that are agnostic, that are atheists, that are Christian. The vast majority, overwhelming majority of all of these religions are very peaceful, and the religions teach peace and harmony. So I hope people don't blame, you know, Muslims or Christians.
Right, I mean, Islam is supposed to be the religion of peace, and certainly there are many people of that faith who have denounced this and who are as abhorred by it as anyone else.
And I hope the first step forward is Maliki needs to be inclusive. I mean, Maliki needs to say, this is an Iraq for everyone, for Sunnis and Shiites and Kurds and Christians alike, and let's try to work together as one country. And I also want to say that, you know, Prince Murad from the royal family in Jordan, he's been extremely helpful, and he's a Sunni.
Yeah, you know, you've met with him personally, I understand.
Yeah, he came to San Diego last year, and we had a big old event, Roads to Success, with Jackie Isaac. Hopefully I'll get her to come on your great show.
That'd be great.
Basically, he came to help out refugees, and there's over 1 million refugees in Jordan, and the royal family in Jordan is Sunni, so we have a lot of Sunni Muslims that are helping out throughout the region and throughout the world, and what's happening in Iraq is just this extremist group that's trying to get power, and they're being successful because the Iraqi government is not united. It's very fragmented.
Yeah. Listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Mark Arabo, a leader in the Chaldean community, about the unfolding humanitarian crisis in Iraq. Mark, thank you very much for taking the time to come here today and join us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you so much.
The death of baseball giant Tony Gwynn at only 54 years of age has drawn national attention to the dangers of chewing tobacco. Gwynn had suffered through surgeries and paralysis of part of his face following cancer linked to his habit of chewing tobacco, a custom shared by many baseball players, as well as 9% of all high school students nationwide. Smokeless tobacco contains 28 cancer-causing carcinogens, and according to the National Cancer Institute. These include formaldehyde, lead, cyanide, benzene, and arsenic, in addition to nicotine. Chewing tobacco can cause tooth decay and tooth loss, and worst of all, cancer. Each year, 36,000 Americans are diagnosed with oral cancer, and nearly half of those die within 5 years after being diagnosed. Now some, including ESPN sportscaster Keith Olbermann, are calling on Major League Baseball to ban chewing tobacco altogether. The Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn coached baseball at San Diego State after leaving the San Diego Padres, and his death has hit home hard for SDSU athletes. Two San Diego State alumni who went on to become Major League players have also announced that they want to quit using chewing tobacco. Addison Reed, the Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher, told MLB.com that on the day Tony Gwynn died, he threw away tins of smokeless tobacco from his locker and car. Another SDSU graduate, Steven Strasburg, now a pitcher with the Washington Nationals, also announced his intention to quit the habit, saying, "Bottom line, I want to be around for my family." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on Assembly Bill 2145, a measure that has been called the Monopoly Protection Bill. As originally written, this measure would have required consumers to opt in before joining a community choice aggregate to buy their power from a city or county-owned alternative to utility corporations. Critics had contended that this would effectively sabotage community choice programs by making it difficult, if not impossible, for groups like the San Diego Energy Foundation to offer consumers alternatives to SDG&E for obtaining clean, renewable power at competitive prices. This week, however, the bill was amended before it won passage out of the Senate Energy, Utilities, and Communications Committee. The amendment stripped out what consumer advocates viewed as the worst of the bill, reversing the opt-in provision to leave community choice aggregate groups as the default providers, meaning that a city or county like San Diego could decide to switch its residents to a community choice aggregate, but would still have to notify consumers of a right to opt out and go back to SDG&E if a resident chose to do so.
Another amendment defines community as three contiguous counties, countering efforts to restrict a community choice program to just one county. However, any city or county that passes a resolution or ordinance prior to December 31st of this year will be grandfathered. Work on this bill continues as it advances through the California legislature. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, and we are back with Mark Arabo from the local Chaldean community, head of the Neighborhood Market Association in East County. And we're here now to talk about a tremendous loss to the Chaldean community of Mike George, who was a well-known leader. Mark, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. The Chaldean community at large has suffered a huge loss today with the passing of Michael J. George. He was an icon in Metro Detroit and a pillar in the Chaldean community. He passed away at age of 81. He was a quintessential American success story by every way. And he helped so many Chaldeans in Michigan when they first came to the States.
And of course, many of the Chaldeans that we have here in San Diego and East County came to Michigan first before they wound up here. So I'd imagine we have many listeners out there who would know this, would know of Mr. George and be saddened to hear of his passing.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone's yearning his loss. And I know the governor of Michigan made a statement praising Mike George for all his tremendous successes and tremendous efforts and that he's made. And I could tell you, we've lost an incredible humanitarian, incredible man, and incredible community leader with his passing.
What were some of the things that he was most known for?
You know, he was an all-around incredible guy. Mike George would be seen as the godfather of Michigan. Folks would go to him and say, I need help starting a business. I need help with this bank. I need help, getting on my feet. And he would help them in any way he can, with nothing in mind that he wanted in return. He just wanted to help them because it's the right thing to do. He served in the Army. He started a milk company that became a really successful venture for him. And he was a philanthropist. He gave back so much. And the entire George family is an incredible family, not just for Michigan, but for San Diego as well. A lot of folks in San Diego now, when they were in Michigan, received some help from Mike George and his family, and it's a very sad day for the community.
For those who may wish to know about memorial services, or is there a service that's been announced? Is there a fund or a cause that the family has asked people to support in his memory?
We still don't know yet. We know that there's going to be a private there's a private and a public ceremony they're going to have for him. Mm-hmm. I know that he was really good friends with U.S. Senator Carl Levin and other people from the Michigan delegation. We still don't know yet, but we definitely want to say that the world was a better place because of Mike George.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. And certainly here at East County Magazine, our hearts go out to the George family and the entire Chaldean community that is mourning this loss on top of so much other distressing news this week out of Iraq. Thank you, Mark, for joining us again on the East County Magazine show.
Thank you so much.
Anza Borrego has long been famous for its spectacular spring wildflower blooms, but now the region's biodiversity is threatened by an invasive weed, the Sahara mustard. The hardy invader first took root in the area about 3 years ago and is thriving in the desert heat. Now it's crowding out the native wildflowers that attract visitors and tourism dollars to the region each spring, KPBS reports. John Redman, botany curator with the San Diego Natural History Museum, warns that it's, quote, changing the ecosystem completely. Kathy Dice, superintendent at the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, says some species are being, quote, driven to extinction. AmeriCorps has sent a team to work with the Anza Borrego Desert State Park to try and eradicate the invasive species. In just 3 weeks, they hauled out 3/4 of a ton of Sahara mustard. More help is needed, and a Sahara mustard task force has been formed that seeks community volunteers willing to help uproot the tenacious weeds that are crowding out desert wildflowers. For more information on how you can help, visit the Anza Borrego Foundation website at theabf.org and put Sahara Mustard Task Force into the search bar. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
An FBI sweep has resulted in the rescue of 168 children who were victimized by sex trafficking nationwide, including 2 children here in San Diego, where 35 adults were also found to be victims of forced prostitution. 6 pimps were arrested in addition in San Diego, while nationally 281 pimps were taken into custody. All of the child victims, adult victims, and others in contact with law enforcement through this operation were offered victim services. Nationwide, the crackdown took place in 106 cities over the past week. The FBI partnered with local, state, and federal enforcement agencies in the Operation Cross-Country Enforcement Action, which is part of the FBI's Innocence Lost national initiative to stop human trafficking of children and adults. FBI Special Agent in Charge, Daphne Hearn, emphasized that the FBI is committed to protecting children, adding, "The FBI will continue to remove sexual predators from society and provide children and adults the services they need to recover from their involvement with human trafficking." The Innocence Lost Initiative was developed in 2003 in partnership with the Department of Justice and National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to address the growing problem of child prostitution. To date, the FBI and its task force partners have recovered over 3,400 children from being exploited. The investigations and subsequent 1,450 convictions have resulted in lengthy sentences, including 14 life terms, as well as seizure of more than $3.1 million in assets. This year, the FBI in San Diego has recovered 7 additional children through investigations, adding to the 19 recoveries from the Operation Cross-Country operations so far. Task force operations usually begin as local enforcement actions that target truck stops, casinos, street tracks, and websites that advertise dating or escort services. The task forces utilize a victim-centered philosophy when assessing the recovered victims. The FBI has 122 trained victim specialists, with at least one in all of their 56 field offices. Here in San Diego, there are 2 victim specialists who are on the front line, providing services to all the victims. They ensure that every victim who accepts services is provided safe shelter, food, clothing, and access to additional services, such as physical and mental health care, as well as other eligible services. The FBI San Diego conducted enforcement actions in partnership with the San Diego Police Department, Sheriff's Department, Oceanside and Escondido Police, the California Highway Patrol, Chula Vista Police, National City Police, and the Department of Homeland Security. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Less cigarette smoking, soda drinking, and physical fighting, but more time at computers and other tech devices. That's the snapshot from the new CDC National Youth Risk Behavior Survey. The government goal of reducing teen smoking nationally to less than 16% has been met. But CDC Director Tom Frieden notes that it's a fragile victory at 15.7%, along with the rise in popularity of e-cigarettes, smoking pens, and electronic hookahs.
And no kids should be exposed to advertising that glorifies the use of nicotine or be able to easily buy e-cigarettes because their sales have not been restricted.
The Maryland rate of smoking in the survey is even better at 12%. Frieden's other concerns, condom use has become less common. Most teens are still not eating a balanced diet. And while most young people are spending fewer hours watching television, they've replaced most of that time with time spent before a computer beyond school reasons. Stephanie Zaza is the director of the Division of Adolescent and School Health at the CDC. She says while they have a lot of great data, they do not have the reasons why kids do the things that they do. She finds it alarming that 41% of teen drivers admit to texting or emailing while driving and urges parents to step in to stop any behavior that takes a teen's attention away from the road.
Parents play an active role in keeping their teen driver safe by close monitoring, frequent discussions, parent-teen driving agreements, and acting as a role model of good driving habits.
The CDC reports that car crashes are the single biggest killer of teens and young adults, causing 23% of deaths among 10 to 24-year-olds. For Public News Service, I'm Deborah Smith.
This is Miriam Raftery reporting for East County Magazine with a story written by our intern, Jessica Richmond. On June 24th, the American Civil Liberties Union clocked a win as a federal judge declared the U.S. government's secretive no-fly list to be unconstitutional. U.S. Judge Anna J. Brown in Portland, Oregon, ruled in favor of constitutionally mandated due process, which, the judge asserted, the no-fly list does not follow, since it secretly places people on the list without explanation or any fair recourse for removal if there's an error. These people, or would-be flyers who have been forbidden to cruise through the airways, have on one hand been saved from the humiliation of those TSA pat-downs and body scanners, but on the other hand, they've had their rights and freedoms of movement curtailed by restricting them to ground travel. What if you were to purchase an airplane ticket to see Grandma in Florida to celebrate her upcoming 100th birthday, only to find out when you arrive at the airport that you've been prohibited from flying? How would you feel, and what would you tell your friends and family? Some high-profile errors have caused chagrin to Homeland Security. For example, the late Senator Ted Kennedy had suffered through the embarrassment of being placed on the no-fly list back in 2004. It reportedly took his staff over 3 weeks to remove his name from the no-fly list. But for ordinary Americans, there has been no easy procedure to get off a list once your name is added. For instance, Rahina Ibrahim has been forced to battle it out in court for years to remove her name off the list after an FBI agent reportedly checked the wrong box accidentally on a form. Many people who have been unfortunate enough to find themselves on the no-fly list have been stymied at every point in the process of trying to get their names off of it. The federal government would require petitioners to submit information or proof supporting their innocence, and yet the government would never stipulate why they were on the list to start with or what possible evidence would constitute removal from the list. This left would-be flyers in the dark about how to challenge inclusion. The judge has since ordered the Department of Justice to quickly amend the process of petitioning the no-fly list such that people who have been wrongly included may have the opportunity to review and correct any information that would otherwise be damaging. How many other Americans have been placed in similarly awkward situations through either a clerical error or if their name, through no fault of their own, happens to be similar to a suspected terrorist, and they're therefore subjected to the same no-fly list restrictions? Now, whether the Department of Justice will appeal the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court or correct its process for people who are petitioning to remove their names from the no-fly list remains to be seen.
It's officially summer and finally time to take that vacation. You can make your break even more stress-free by signing up for vacation checks from the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. The free vacation check service is offered to residents year-round. Residents who live in the unincorporated areas or sheriff contract cities can sign up to have a sheriff senior volunteer patrol come check on your home while you're away. The senior volunteer patrol will perform a security inspection outside the home Monday through Friday. They check to make sure doors, windows, and garages are locked. They also hide newspapers and packages in a side fence or back patio. If the patrol sees anything suspicious or unusual, like broken windows or open doors, they call a deputy to investigate. To sign up for the service, visit sdsheriff.net. Click on Vacation Home Checks box to get to the form, and then take it to your nearest sheriff's station or substation to verify your identification. For those staying home, it's important not to get too lax with security around the house. As summer approaches, people take advantage of the sunny weather to do outdoor projects, take their family to fun places, relax, and keep cool. It can be easy to forget to close a door or window, but if they are left open, it creates an easy opportunity for a burglar. Sheriff Crime Prevention Specialists compiled some handy tips to help residents better safeguard their homes and vehicles when going on vacation. First, lock up your house. Activate your alarm. Then, don't broadcast your plans on social media. Hold the delivery of your mail and newspaper or ask a friend to pick them up for you. Buy a timer for your lights and set them at a random pattern. Ask a neighbor to occasionally park in your driveway. You can also sign up for a free vacation check so Sheriff's Senior Volunteer Patrol members can keep an eye on your house. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Raina Menashe, guest hosting this week's Destination East County. Summer is officially here, and this week's Destination East County brings you plenty of sizzling summertime activities, from concerts and movies under the stars to night fishing, a chili cook-off, and a Firefighters Appreciation Day event to support our local heroes. On Wednesday, June 25th, Cajon Classic Cruise Car Show will be held with this week's theme, Charger Steve's Stars Cars, on East Main Street between Magnolia and Claydell Avenues. The 214 season is hosted by the Downtown Business Partners. For car show dates and themes all summer long, visit www.downtownec.com. Bring a lantern for night fishing under the stars at Santee Lakes on Thursday night, June 26th. No fishing licenses required, just a permit that you can pick up at the general store. The lake is stocked with bass and bluegill. You can fish off five docks or four fishable islands, as well as from the shore, making this a fun destination to bring the kids and get them hooked on fishing. Who's got the hottest chili in town? Firefighters from the Alpine, Viejas, and Sequan Fire Departments will be cooking up their entries in a chili-tasting challenge during the 4th Annual Firehouse Cook-Off on Thursday, June 26th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Alpine Library. The public is invited to meet the firefighters, sample chili in the cook-off, and vote on which team has the best culinary skills. East County Cities are hosting concerts in several local parks this week. All of these concerts are free to the community. On Thursday, Santee hosts the Highwaymen at the Santee Town Center from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. On Friday night, El Cajon's Dinner and Concert Series presents the Jones Revival, performing new Southern rock from 6 to 8 p.m. Then on Sunday, June 29th, La Mesa's Sundays at 6 concert in Harry Griffin Park will feature trails and rails, cowboys and train songs. Bring your blankets, beach chairs, and barbecue or picnic dinner. The Legos Movie will be the feature film at this Friday night's Movies in the Park at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. Showtime starts at 8 p.m. You can lounge under the stars in a serene park-like setting, and yes, you can even order popcorn. Firefighters put their lives on the line to save our communities. On Sunday, June 29th, the Bucking DeLorean Restaurant in Lakeside is hosting Firefighters Appreciation Day. All firefighters will receive discounts on food and drinks, or maybe even a free meal, since the public is encouraged to pay a firefighter's tab with donation boxes for that purpose. This event also features live bands all day, including Patrick Trampas and James Kramer from Barbwire. In addition, participants can ride a mechanical bull or try their hand at horseshoes in a horseshoe pit outside. The Bucking DeLorean is located at 10109 Main Avenue in Lakeside. For more information, call 619-561-6767. Now for a preview of some coming attractions. The City of El Cajon will host its annual 4th of July picnic and fireworks at Kennedy Park. The picnic begins at 1 p.m. with food, games, prizes, and train rides for children. Live musical entertainment begins at 3 p.m., with the highlight of the event, fireworks, at 9 p.m. Arrive early for parking and to find the ideal spot for your picnic and viewing the fireworks. The City of Santee will host its annual Santee Salutes event on July 4th from 3:30 to 10 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East, located at 550 Park Center Drive. This event includes live music featuring 80s All-Stars, a patriotic ceremony, Kids Fun Zone with rides and more, and the grand finale, a dazzling fireworks display. Admission is free, though there is a parking fee at nearby lots, with parking costs supporting local youth sports leagues. Or you can take a free shuttle service from the Costco parking lot to the event. On Saturday, July 5th, KNSJ invites you to our community radio station's first anniversary party from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitors Center. Come mix and mingle with our radio hosts and celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, museum, no host bar, two stages with comedy acts and musical entertainment. For tickets and reservations, visit www.knsj.org. The 45th Annual Descanso Days Festival will be held July 12th at Descanso's historic town hall, along with a parade. This year's parade theme is Bonnets and Boots, with prizes for the best parade entries in several categories. The parade starts at 10 a.m. You can also listen to live music while savoring pit barbecued beef cooked up by the master chefs of Pine Valley Mountain Riders. Just Friends will start the musical lineup with their bluegrass twang at 11 a.m., followed by Steve Hill and the Hill Country Band on the KSON flatbed stage from 1 to 5 p.m. There will also be a variety of activities, especially for kids, including wheelbarrow races, an egg toss, and a nail driving contest, as well as a best bonnet competition for all ages. A silent auction and drawings will also be held for items ranging from hay bales to Aztec tickets. The roads close at 9:30 a.m. for the parade and reopen after the parade, so visitors are encouraged to arrive early. Kids of all ages are invited to join the fun and showcase pets at the first annual Pet Parade and St. Adelaide Parish Family Festival on July 12th at the Campo Baseball Field. The parade begins at 11 a.m., and the festival runs from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Parade entrants are invited to decorate a wagon or stroller for your pet, or walk with your pets on a leash. Pre-registration is required by 5 p.m., Friday, July 11th. Prizes will be awarded for the most creative and most entertaining costumes, as well as the pastor's choice. Drawings will also be held for prizes, including a half a steer to fill your freezer, donated by Wright Ranch of Potrero. The festival also includes vendor booths, inflatable slide and water combo, face painting, and refreshments. Registration forms and flyers for this event are available on our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found in our calendar and in the festival and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
See you around, East County!
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Eagles, America's national symbols, have special status under the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, Killing an eagle or engaging in activities that lead to the death of an eagle is currently punishable by a $5,000 fine and 1 year in prison in most cases. Felony convictions can result in far stiffer penalties, up to a $250,000 fine or 2 years in prison, and the fine for an organization that kills an eagle can be double that, up to $500,000. Despite numerous eagle deaths from wind turbines in the United States, wind energy companies have not been held responsible for those killings, until recently, that is. In December, the U.S. Department of Justice issued a $1 million fine against Duke Energy Renewables for 14 eagle deaths at its industrial wind project in Wyoming. And right after that, also in December, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service responded by announcing plans that, if approved, would let wind developers largely off the hook for future eagle deaths. The Federal Wildlife Agency that is supposed to protect wildlife is proposing a rule change that, if approved, would allow wind energy developers and other corporations to apply for eagle take permits that last 30 years, up from 5 years currently allowed under a 2009 decision, and that plan had already proven controversial. A take permit, if it's approved by the agency, allows a designated number of eagles to be killed inadvertently with no penalty to the corporation, although killing an eagle on purpose would still trigger the fines. That is disturbing news to residents and environmentalists here in San Diego's East County, where the local eagle population has dropped sharply in recent years. While nobody is certain why the number of eagle nests and nesting pairs have declined locally, the drop has occurred at the same time that our region's first two industrial-scale wind energy projects were built in Campo and later Ocotillo. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to host 5 public information meetings in various locations around the nation and open a 90-day public comment period on its proposal. While none of the hearings are in San Diego, there will be a hearing held on July 22nd in Sacramento and on July 29th in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Other meetings are set in Minneapolis, Denver, and Washington, D.C. this summer. For more information about these public information meetings, you can visit www.eaglescoping.org. The public information sessions will serve as scoping meetings required under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. Information from these meetings will be reviewed by the Fish and Wildlife Service as the agency prepares either a draft environmental assessment or environmental impact statement, as well as proposed revisions to the permit regulations for eagles. The service will then open another comment period for an additional round of public review and input before announcing its final decisions. Now, written comments on this proposal by the public will be accepted by the agency up through September 22, 2014, either electronically or by U.S. mail. And for details on how you can submit these comments, you can visit the Green Living section at eastcountymagazine.org. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.